Good morning, it's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. The unrest in Baltimore in April brought intense focus to the racial and economic inequalities in certain sections of the city, and also to the work local organizations are doing to help those communities overcome obstacles to jobs that pay a livable wage. One of those organizations is the Center for Urban Families, located near the epicenter of the unrest in Penn North. The nonprofit runs programs geared toward everyone, but it focuses on fathers and their role in families. Joe Jones founded the Center for Urban Families. He's president and CEO. Tom Hall spoke with him in 2013 for our series about inequality, The Lines Between Us. And today, just before Father's Day, we want to check back with Joe Jones. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Were you surprised by the anger that spilled out with the unrest in April?
Well, first of all, happy Father's Day to all the dads out there and to the moms who've been playing father roles for quite some time.
And happy Father's Day to you.
Thank you. Yes and no. I kind of see it as an accumulation of punches, sort of like the what I would call the Muhammad Ali effect versus the Mike Tyson effect, meaning that, you know, Mike Tyson is known to have been a boxer who could knock you out with one punch. Muhammad Ali was more of a traditional pugilist who would jab you to death, but he would still get you. It would just be an accumulation of punches. And I think what happened in Baltimore is not a result of one incident. It's the accumulation of events that have happened around the country, and the economic disparity has gone on for centuries.
Right. In Baltimore, more than the other cities where there have been protests around police-community relations, and maybe it just seems to me this way because I'm in Baltimore, but it seems like the conversation quickly focused on causes of economic disparities. It seems like that the conversation went there very quickly. Not to forget about the questions of justice with police, but it seems like we've been talking a lot about the long-term, the generational poverty, the long-term unemployment, and that's a lot of what you do with Centers for Urban Families. What are the skills that a young Black man in your neighborhood needs?
Well, you know, we were largely a manufacturing and industrial economy, and when that economy began to become dismantled several years ago, and we began to evolve to more of a technology, a service, and STEM community, right, there really wasn't a bridge or a pathway for transferable skills to go from one economy to the new economy. And so it left a gap, including a skills gap, for men who previously could work with a limited education to earn a family-sustaining wage. They could buy a row house in Baltimore. They could contribute to their children's education. That largely disappeared. And with the advent of the war on drugs in the 70s, it created this new kind of illicit underground economy that made it easy for people to get attracted to it just because of the economic value.
Because and if you control the industrial jobs weren't there
they
anymore.
Weren't there anymore, and the skills that were needed to transfer, we as a country weren't prepared to help that generation of people transfer. And so we've left now generation after generation of young minority men who haven't had great experiences in our public school systems, and so they haven't been prepared for the new economy. And so we've kind of like turned a blind eye to certain communities like Sandtown, where these men have resided. Large numbers have been impacted by the engagement in the criminal justice system, when we've had sort of like policies where we've kind of sucked up large numbers of men from our community, giving them a criminal justice experience. And so they now are X'd out of certain segments of the labor economy. And it makes it very difficult and frustrating and almost perpetuates this sense of hopelessness within a lot of segments of our community.
It's Joe Jones, president, CEO, and founder of the nonprofit Center for Urban Families in West Baltimore. This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Father's Day is Sunday, and we're thinking about the role of fathers in healing Baltimore after the unrest. Part of what your programs do is teach soft skills, interpersonal skills, leadership, effective communication, showing up on time.
That's right.
I've talked to employers who say soft skills are the most important, but these are habits. It's very hard to learn quickly. I mean, it's hard to learn them in a few weeks. We think of these as something that you inculcate over a lifetime. How do you teach soft skills?
These are fundamental. These don't require you to have a college education. It doesn't require you to be a part of an apprenticeship program. It doesn't require you to have a high school diploma. It requires you to have the basic fundamental skills that's going to allow you to get liked. to be able to engage people socially, right? But when you have a life experience where you are born into this world where some cases you don't believe you have an angel on your side, you don't have a great school experience, you get exposed to the criminal justice system, you begin to acquire a set of skills that will allow you to effectively negotiate that environment, as opposed to if you were, you know, consistently in school and we nurtured you on the grounds of Coppin State University, Tuskegee, or Harvard University. But the skills that our folks are learning in some cases, the guys I care mostly about, they're learning their skills in the Baltimore City Detention Center or some other criminal justice or juvenile justice institution. And so they are effectively learning the skills that will allow them to be successful there. They don't easily translate to the world of work, where almost all of these guys that I come in contact with want to be. So we have to peel back and start from the beginning. How do you wear a suit and a tie, and how do you become comfortable with it? If you've never had one on before, you don't know how to tie a tie, you just don't throw it at somebody. There's a process, there's an indoctrination that will allow you to become comfortable over time, but it also has to be coupled on the back end with, when you acquire those kind of skills, there really has to be real economic opportunity on the backside.
Can you build on the skills that somebody learns in a life of crime? Can you actually transform those skills into the skills they need on the job?
Yes, but the problem is there aren't enough places in our society where these guys can be engaged, they can be respected, our respect can be commanded back from them, and we create an opportunity to allow them to acquire the skills without being punitive, right? And so we have, for example, in three zip codes around our building, 21215, 21216, and 21217, we have approximately 2,400 men who owe more than $20 million in back state-owed child support, right? In those three zip codes alone, they also happens to be three zip codes, the top zip codes where people released from incarceration come back to. So we have real disparities, acute disparities in those communities that make it really so difficult that even if you acquire the soft skills, where is the opportunity? So yes, we can teach those skills, right? But key to the skills in terms of that phase of workforce attachment has to be opportunity on the other side. And then you can get to the hard skills that will allow you to move up the wage scale over time. And we have keen examples of that, you know, in terms of men who've made that transition, who are now making family-sustaining wages, who are becoming homeowners and taking care of their children and making sure that those children are consistently in school. That's the longitudinal approach that we at the center, through our Family Stability and Economic Success model, are implementing that we believe is scalable and is a keen example of what can happen in Baltimore as a result of the unrest here.
Tell me a bit of your own personal story and how it plays into the work you do.
Well, you know, my personal story is like the personal story of many, some men in our communities across the country. You know, I grew up in East Baltimore. Unfortunately, when my parents broke up when I was 9, I fell into a very bad place. By the time I was 13, I began to engage in an illegal drug trade, both as a user and tried to be a seller. You know, but it's hard to be a seller when you're a user. It's just, you know, using my own product. Unfortunately, I was in and out of incarceration during a 17-year period. I had a son out of wedlock, my first child during that period. And so when I was fortunate in 1986 to turn my life around with the support of many, including the availability of a one-year stay in residential drug treatment, which doesn't really exist in our communities anymore, I was fortunate enough to get an opportunity to come out of that and to be able to follow my passion to want to help people. And I did not know that that was exactly what I wanted to do. I just didn't want to do what I was doing before. And so I've used that to kind of motivate myself to really help us to have a better Baltimore and to have a better society. And I think that God gave me certain gifts. In other instances, I think I forgot to get in some line because God didn't give me gifts in other areas. So we all have strengths and limitations. And so I try to surround myself with very, very, very smart people and to use my gifts to complement the gifts that they have.
The events of this spring have focused on some deep work that you and others are doing, but it's also focused on how deep the problems are, how hard they are to turn mm-hmm. around. How do you keep hope going?
Well, for me, it is unless I am going to put myself on a spaceship and go to someplace in the universe where I can completely detach myself from, you know, Earth, and that's not a reality, what we have to do collectively, we have to think through strategically ways in which we can collaborate, ways in which we can build a better Baltimore, but we focus on the young people in our schools to make sure that they're consistently in schools. We have to make sure that this skills gap that exists between those who are effectively in the labor market and those aren't, that that skills gap is filled, and to make sure that the adults, whether they're young adults or a little bit older, that they get the kind of support that will allow them to transition into our relatively new economy, which, by the way, is becoming more and more robust because we're getting more and more calls from employers saying, I need more qualified workers. So we have to make sure that we have that sort of like coordinated investment. We can't have a city where a baseball game is played and no fans are there. We can't have the Orioles transitioning three home games to away games that can't be made up. We can't have the Horseshoe Casino closing early because we have a curfew that was needed because of the unrest, because that depresses the economic opportunity for businesses to think about whether or not they're going to stay here. And for companies that are thinking about moving here, it will prevent them from making the kind of hard decisions to locate here. And so when we collectively, business, philanthropy, faith, nonprofit leaders, the media, when we come together as one and begin to think about how we use our collective intellect to be able to move this city forward, we have huge potential. But it's not going to happen overnight, right? The events around the unfortunate demise of Mr. Carlos Freddie Gray will not allow us to be the best that we can here in Baltimore unless we come together as one. And the last thing I will say, that divide that exists right now between the community and the police, we really have to work on that. We can't have a society where the community and the police don't get along. So we got a lot of work to do in that area. And when we recognize it, and when I say recognize it, the one way in which you begin to solve a problem, you have to acknowledge that the problem exists, and we have to start there.
Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Joe Jones. He's president, CEO, and founder of the nonprofit Center for Urban Families in West Baltimore. We have more information on our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Ahead on Maryland Morning, how high art influenced early TV. Stay with us on 88.1.